Red Line.
Despite the 5-year UN arms embargo against Tripoli, world powers took the uneasy decision to resume weapon supplies to the Government of National Accord in Libya as it struggles to stop major offenses from Daesh and other terrorist groups. This is what we are going to discuss in our second section, Between the Lines, analyzing the most thought-provoking publications of the week. In an article titled, U.S. and Allies Ready to Help Arm Libyan Forces Against Islamic State, written by Carol Morello and carried by The Washington Post, the journalist reports that diplomats said they would support Libya's request to be exempted from a U.N. embargo that was put in place 5 years ago to keep arms out of the hands of Islamic militants and rival militias locked in a power struggle. Other parts of the embargo would be reinforced, the communique said, so that arms go only to the forces being established by the Government of National Accord that returned to Libya 6 weeks ago when Prime Minister Fayez Sarraj arrived on a boat with his allies. Later on in her article, she quotes Italian Foreign Minister Paolo Gentiloni. With stabilization, we can fight terrorism, he said. We can assure development to a country with rich potentials. But with a strong humanitarian crisis now, we can tackle the migration issue. We can develop the resources of Libya. Without stabilization, we risk tensions, divisions, and intra-Libyan fights.
Well, I think all of us would agree that what's happening in Libya is one big mess, to say the least. Even more, it's a tragedy. We are well aware what expectations were voiced by those who were speaking about toppling Colonel Gaddafi. There was a belief, popular belief in the West, that there are so-called Democrats sitting in Benghazi, and once they oust Colonel Gaddafi, they will be free, democratic, prosperous Libya. But now it is turning into a hotbed of tension, into a springboard of terrorism. There's a lot of talk of fighting Daesh in Iraq and Syria, but the world may misplace this new reality, newly imagined dangerous reality of Islamic terrorists using Southeast Asia as its own backyard. So that's why now probably, as there's no way just to get back to that stability which we had, Russia and the West have to come up together to this new threat of Islamists, and probably to consider the arms embargo, how it corresponds with those things which are happening at the ground. Because you know that the arms embargo was imposed 2011 after ousting Colonel Gaddafi. The reality is such that it seems that National Accord government is not able, so far is not able, to stop that major offensive of Islamic terrorists. They're desperate for arms, and it is crystal clear that they need a support. And that's why the message of the Vienna meeting was that there should be a mechanism which, bypassing that arms embargo, would ensure them getting arms. But the key question is, even if they're getting those arms, is there any guarantee that those arms would not one day find themselves in the hands of terrorists? Because Libyan state is very weak. It is fragmented into different fighting groupings, utterly corrupted. So what is the guarantee?
Well, if the military retreats like the Iraqi military did in 2014, it's a very real risk. But this is why we're discussing this very pressing topic. And we'd like to speak first to our in-studio guest, Mr. Ivan Timofeyev. He's director of programs at the Russian Council of International Relations. Okay, so I'd like to ask you about Russia's strategic calculations in all this, because, of course, the UNSC could not have agreed to this move without Russian and also Chinese agreements. So what do you think is behind Russia's decision to support the lifting or, if you will, exemptions to the arms embargo?
Well, you see that their experience in Syria shows that it is hardly possible to fight with terrorism and with Daesh and other terrorist organizations without having an effective, more or less stable government. So it cannot be defeated by any foreign power. So it's a matter of the country which fights terrorism itself. It may be supported, it may be supplied in terms of arms, instructors, finance, but without effective local government, it's hardly possible to change anything. So we have this experience, and it is more or less successful by now. So we managed to rearm Syrian army, and with our support, it managed to, let's say, to make several tactical defeats in Syria. But the situation in Libya is more complicated. In fact, it is more complicated. Though our attention is distracted to Syria, but and we miss what's going on in Libya. But there, their development is not so optimistic. And I agree with what Sergei said that it's really a mess.
Yeah, but
in terms of state consistency,
you said that we need credible government, but this government,
effective government
of Prime Minister Fayez Sarraj, it returned to Libya 6 weeks ago on boats from Tunisia. You know, so how strong it can be? So it's a newly imagined government.
Well, it's a big problem. It's a big problem of institutions. It's a big problem of legitimacy, of credibility. And the problem is that even if these guys get arms, how these arms would be used?
Because that's what I'm saying.
It's not enough to have tanks and artillery. It's important to be aware how to use them and how to, let's say, reconcile, how to construct local coalitions. Because you know that Libya is characterized, even when Gaddafi was in power, it still lacked state consistency due to the competition of tribes there. So now it is also a matter of fact. So it's a big job to make effective institutions there.
Okay, yeah, thank you for explaining that to us. It definitely is a patchwork of tribes, ethnicities, competing groups and everything. But right now we have another guest to come on the line and tell us more about this. That's Mr. Justin Dargan. He is a Middle East scholar at the University of Oxford.
Red Line.
Hello, Mr. Dargan. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for coming on the program. You know, what I want to ask you about is, you know, we're discussing the possible lifting or, if you will, exemption of the UNSC arms embargo on Libya. But at the same time, there are reports that there are British, American, Italian, and French special forces on the ground. So I'd like to ask you about what kind of role these on-the-ground special forces could play in any tentative weapon shipment to Libya. I mean, would they be acting as advisors? Could they possibly be actively involved in combat? Would they be guaranteeing that the arms do not fall into the bad hands? What kind of role do these reported special forces play in the future?
Well, actually, I would say all of the above. So we could say that the role is quite amorphous and actually quite flexible. And, I mean, as we know, many of the militias that are actually backing the rival governments in Libya at the moment, they do lack, we could say, a type of military discipline. So basically what would happen is that these special forces and special operations that are in reportedly in Libya at this time would be they would basically be serving to give a type of a backbone to any type of national army that could be formed. And also, I think, on the other hand, and you did indicate this, is that there has to be some type of vetting process as well, because, you know, we do know that efforts of, you know, the U.S. and so on to support certain forces throughout the Middle East, sometimes these plans have gone astray and the weapons have fallen into the wrong hands. And, of course, we have seen this with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan and, you know, as, you know, Stinger missiles and various weapons fell into what later became the Taliban and also, you know, Al-Qaeda and what have you. And then also in Iraq, weapons that were given to the Iraqi government had fallen into the hands of the Islamic State and also various Shiite militias. So I think that, you know, having special forces on the ground at least would, we could say, serve to allay the concern of a certain Western governments that the arms would fall into hands of some of the wrong parties, and which indeed has happened, you know, often in the past.
Justin, this government of Prime Minister Fayez Sarraj is an enigma to the world, as it's only 6 weeks old. To what extent do you think it would be able to come up with coherent development strategy with the idea of national reconciliation, if it is possible at all in a deeply split, divided country when you have Tripoli, you have Tobruk, you have parallel governments? So how they're going to make it?
Well, you see, actually, one of the problems is that with the outcome of the Vienna conference, now I think more or less the arms embargo was symbolic or even toothless, because Libya is already awash in arms. We had the arms bid up during the Gaddafi administration and also during the civil war. And then also arms are still being covertly sent to Libya by various countries. I mean, we could almost argue that the lifting, or at least, it's going to be sent to the UN Security Council, but at least this, the outcome of the Vienna conference was a vote of confidence for Siraj's government. Now, basically, one thing that we have to understand is that giving this symbolic vote of confidence to the government of National Accord may also serve to obstruct any type of power-sharing agreement if Siraj feels that he has the support of, the major Western powers, and thereby he does not need to form any type of power-sharing agreement with the rival governments in the country. So actually, that could be one of the outcomes of this, Vienna conference, and I think that is quite possible, and it could give Siraj a false sense of security, and thereby feeling that he doesn't need to come to any type of accommodation with any of the rival governments in the country.
And in your view, how serious is this threat of Libya emerging as another springboard of international terrorism in South Africa?
I think that there are, bad concerns for that. And Libya does have a history. Of course, it's not necessarily based on Islamic extremism, but it does have a history of funneling arms and weapons to various groups in Africa and what have you. This happened during the Gaddafi regime, and potentially it can happen now. So I think that it is, of course, a valid concern. And also, there is a concern that in West Africa and also the Sahel region, there are groups that have pledged loyalty to ISIS. So one of the fears is that there could be direct lines of communication formed in this type of, if I were to use this term, the extremist Facebook, maybe we could say, throughout West Africa and the Sahel, and that they could coordinate, certain attacks and what have you. So I think one of the goals of the world powers is to disrupt any type of emergent terrorist network that could be formed. And also, there's another issue as well. Because of Russian and U.S.-led airstrikes in Syria and also Iraq, they think that not only are migrants, refugees going to be heading to Libya due to the agreement between the EU and Turkey this past March when that migratory springboard was cut off, but also that some of the ISIS fighters could be heading to Libya as well, seeing that that is perhaps a much more sustainable place to continue their activities. So I think that there is a valid concern for that.
Red Line.
Mr. Timofeev, you heard what Mr. Dargin was saying about Russia and United States. To what extent do you think global powers can emerge in Libya also in fighting terrorists, bypassing their difference?
Well, it's a big issue, and it's quite a complicated thing to be fulfilled. On the one hand, we have more or less positive experience in Syria, so Russians and Americans are in constant consultations on what's going on, but it doesn't mean that we are doing an alliance job. So we are not the allies. So we
Absolutely.
Are not a coalition. And there are lots of disagreements which I hear on different international conferences. So it's not a matter of fact that we will be able to make an effective partnership there. We have a big portion of uncertainty in our relations. We have our own strategies and games, and it's not a matter of fact that we'll be able to manage them.
Yes, so thank you very much, Mr. Timofeev. Well, right now we've run all out of time, so we just have to wrap up. You know, Sergey, it seems like this is really the new front of the war on terror. I mean, there are many fronts we can say. I mean, obviously Syria is ground number one. Iraq is there as well. But Libya had really turned into a major problem, and it seems like it snuck up on a lot of people. Granted, I had been following it. Other experts have been following it too, but it seems like the international community is only now just awakening to the problems that are there right on Europe's doorstep.
Absolutely, and I think that our discussion revealed that while there's no way just to ignore the signals which are coming from Libyan government, sending them arms, we have to be well aware that giving arms to Libya, this is a sort of a double-edged sword things. We should not forget that those arms can be used by terrorists. And the second thing is that what Mr. Timofeev was saying, this is important, that while still there's room for our cooperation with the United States, still we have to understand that if we don't overcome all the hurdles in our relations in broader terms, that we won't be able to cooperate effectively in Libya as well.
Yes, absolutely. So we're going to thank all of our guests for participating, beginning with our in-studio guest, Mr. Ivan Timofeyev. He's Director of Programs at the Russian Council for International Relations, and Mr. Justin Dargan. He's the Middle East Scholar at the University of Oxford. Following in our program, we have Michelle Temer, Non-Olympic Games. Stay with us.